Hello everyone and welcome to another edition of Classic Wrestling Pay-Per-Views. That's right, I'm delivering on this one. I skipped back in July at the time was not really feeling up to it. I'll eventually get to that one at some point. Maybe I'll do it as a bonus episode for next year when I cover the pay-per-view that I already have in mind for that month next year. So yeah, but yes, Classic Wrestling pay-per-views for the month of October, and this one I am covering perhaps the most infamous WCW pay-per-view in the company's history for quite a few reasons, and that is Halloween Havoc 1998. This is a pay-per-view that I've never seen before. I've only heard stories from other people who have experienced it and from documentaries of people who were involved with the show itself. So yeah, I had quite a bar set for me going into watching this one for the first time earlier this evening. And I'm recording this Saturday evening, October the 24th. This is going up October the 25th, which is exactly 22 years since the original broadcasting of this pay-per-view. And before I get into what went down on the pay-per-view itself, I want to preface it by saying I actually had a pretty good time watching this pay-per-view, you know, all things considered. The reputation that this particular pay-per-view has, you know, I did not expect much from it, but I was pleasantly surprised to see that I enjoyed it very much for the most part. But yeah, with that said, let's get right to it. And I have 5 pages of notes on my little notepad right here. So they're not completely detailed, but I'll, you know, throw in my little 2 cents in here and there for whatever notes that I don't have regarding some of the matches. But yes, we opened the pay-per-view with a performance from the Nitro Girls, which, you know, cool. I was a fan of the Nitro Girls during that era, and just, you know, didn't really see why they needed them for this pay-per-view, but I guess because it was in Las Vegas, they figured, you know, Las Vegas, you know, showgirls and all that stuff. So yeah. Then after the opening performance from the Nitro Girls, we had Mean Gene Okerlund interviewing Rick Steiner to talk about his match that he would be having against his brother Scott later in the pay-per-view. But then Buff Bagwell arrived to show his support for Rick and to offer to be in his corner for the match that he's going to have with Scott. Because up until this point, at least in storyline, that Buff Bagwell had been part of the NWO. Scott Steiner joined the NWO, and on the Nitro before this, he had seemingly dropped being part of the NWO in favor of, you know, helping out Rick. And then Rick, he was hesitant, but he eventually accepted the offer. And then we finally get to our opening matchup, which was Raven versus Chris Jericho for the WCW World Television Championship. And what the first thing that I noticed right away is for their entrances, they came out, their music was dubbed with their WWE entrance music, which was kind of funny, but at the same time, watching it actually kind of worked watching this on the broadcast, because, you know, most people that you remember the WCW theme songs were basically like generic instrumental versions of actual songs, like with Ravens was a generic instrumental version of Come As You Are by Nirvana. And Jericho's was a version of Even Flow by Pearl Jam. You know, but they were overdubbed with their WWE theme songs, and it actually worked. It didn't feel too out of place, you know, watching it. But then, you know, before the match, Raven, he cut a little promo talking about not wanting to be there for this match because the match was a supposed last-minute addition, plus he had been on a bit of a losing streak around that time. So then he just decided to just up and leave the match. He didn't want to be part of it at all. And then Jericho cut a little promo himself where he was belittling Raven, essentially, you know, false and sarcastic praise, talking about the great leader of the flock and all this other stuff, and, you know, just basically baited him into coming back into the ring, and they got the match going. And it was a very evenly matched fight. I really enjoyed it from start to finish, honestly. I mean, it had great action, it had great drama, you know, great storytelling. You know, like I always talk about great storytelling in wrestling matches, because, you know, if there's no story, I have no reason to care about the match itself, you know? With certain matches at least. Just check out my previous wrestling podcast that I've done on here. You guys should know already. If you're watching this, it's because you're already a subscriber and you're already a follower of my content. You already know what I'm all about. So yeah. Not really too many spots in the match that I can really, that really stood out to me. I mean, there was one pretty cool spot where they had the steel steps on the outside where Raven did like a front suplex to Jericho on top of the steps and then launched him to the steps on the other side of the ring, which, it looked like it hurt because the steel steps that WCW had, it wasn't like WWE where they had the two, like the bottom steps and then the top steps and you can take them apart. It was one solid piece of steel for the steps. So like one jump, they didn't break apart like WWE steps do. It was one giant hunk of steel for the steps. So it hurt, I'm sure. Like I said, it was good, fast-paced action, very evenly matched from both. It was a very good match, which is to be expected from, these two men, Jericho and Raven, legends of this industry. Jericho, in fact, celebrating 30 years as a professional wrestler earlier this month. And the match eventually, with a minor distraction from Chris Kanyon, allowed Jericho to score the victory with the Lion Tamer and Raven tapping out within seconds of the fold being applied and Jericho retaining the WCW World Television title. And it was cool getting to see the old school Lion Tamer. And also I noticed on the kick pads that Jericho had that it said role model on them, which is just, because of Bayley's, character being the role model since she turned heel a year ago. It's just kind of funny. And then next we had a promo with Eric Bischoff and Hollywood Hogan, where Hogan was bragging about beating the shit out of his own nephew, Horace Hogan, on the previous week's episode of Nitro, and then saying that he was going to do the same thing to the Warrior later in the pay-per-view for their big match that they'd been hyping up for the entire time. And I remember during that time period where they were really hyping up that match, like it was going to be the biggest grudge match in the history of pro wrestling. But at the time, that's what WCW did. They always overhyped everything as it was going to be the greatest of the greatest of all time kind of thing for literally everything. The greatest moment in the history of our great sport. And it was one of the tired sayings that they always love to use. But anyways, the next match that we had was Ming, a.k.a. Haku, versus Wrath, a.k.a. Adam Bomb, a.k.a. Brian Clark. And this one was a pretty good match. I mean, nothing too spectacular, nothing that really stood out, at least not to me, Wrath eventually coming out victorious. It's not really a spectacular match, but if you like just good, hard-hitting, kind of action, this is a good match for you. But then after this, we had Disco Inferno versus Juventud Guerrera, with the winner fighting Billy Kidman for the Cruiserweight title later in the pay-per-view. And, it was your fairly standard Cruiserweight match, that WCW had, which is not really a complaint of mine. Because WCW's Cruiserweight division was the highlight of WCW, basically. Yeah, the NWO was getting the ratings, but in terms of the matches themselves, the Cruiserweight division was where it was at. So I remember even Jericho said it on his WWE documentary that they released on Blu-ray, DVD and Blu-ray back in 2010, where he said, that the main event scene for between WWF and WCW at the time, WWF was winning that, but the undercard of WCW was where it was at. So, it didn't have as many high spots as you usually would be for a WCW Cruiserweight match. But again, not really complaining because it was a very good match. It was, good storytelling throughout. I enjoyed it very much. I was always a fan of both guys. Yes, I was a fan of Disco Inferno. As cheesy as that gimmick was, it worked. He made it work. I loved it. My brothers and I loved it. And whenever he would come out doing his entrance with the Disco Fever theme song and doing the Saturday Night Fever dance, for the entrance all throughout, we would get into it. It was fun. And plus, he had the right personality to pull off such a character. But eventually, Disco, he did win, earning his shot against Billy Kidman to come later in this pay-per-view. And he won it with a spike. I think they called it a spike pile driver, but it just looked like a regular pile driver, but it looked pretty damn good. It was a very solid pile driver. And then we had more Nitro Girl dancing after this match. And then came out Scott Steiner to cut a Scott Steiner promo, which wrestling fans love a good Scott Steiner promo. And he was just talking trash about his brother Rick and Buff Bagwell, calling Buff Bagwell a mama's boy and a bunch of other stuff, I think. And then basically said, you know, let's make it interesting and make it a tag team match where there would be Scott teaming with The Giant, a.k.a. The Big Show, against his brother Rick and Buff Bagwell. And that they would even put the WCW tag team titles on the line. And then J.J. Dillon came out and added the stipulation that if Scott and The Giant lose, then Scott will have to fight Rick for a 15-minute time limit immediately after this match. And Scott accepted because, you know, with the backing of the NWO, he thought he was untouchable. So then next up, we had Fit Finley versus Alex Wright. And fans chanted boring for this match, which, I mean, it was the height of the Attitude Era. You know, straight up wrestling matches were not really the thing at the time. You know, but, you know, I mean, I thought it was a very good wrestling match. I really did. And my only complaint is that I wish it would have been a few minutes longer. I think it was just a little more than 5 minutes. I could be wrong. I mean, that's how it felt, at least to me. But it was a good, solid wrestling match. And Alex Wright won that one as well. I know, it's already how many matches? And the thing is, this was only the first hour of the pay-per-view. So let me see how many matches we had for the first hour. 1, 2, 3, 4, and then 5. 5 matches for the first hour of the pay-per-view. When the fifth match was Lodi versus Saturn, former members of the Raven's flock. And this one was a pretty entertaining match. It was a short match, but it was pretty entertaining, honestly. I mean, Saturn, he was a badass, of course. He always was a badass in the ring. One of the best. You know, it's sad to see how his health has been on the decline in recent years, and I hope he's getting the help that he needs, and he's doing much better. I know he's not even watching this. He's not listening to this podcast. Because, you know, he could care less. Couldn't care less about a guy like me, so. But I hope he is doing well. And, yeah, he was a badass throughout this match. And Lodi, he was pretty funny because he was the sign guy for the flock. You know, like, they had sign guy Dudley and with the Dudley boys back in the ECW days. And he was the sign guy for the Raven's flock. So, yeah, he was too concerned with his signs. And because, like, you know, they're like the ring person that they would, you know, they would always have come out to, like, take their, like, the ring jackets and stuff and bring it to the back. They were grabbing his signs, and then he ducked out of the ring so he can retrieve his signs. And that was just, I don't know, I got a kick out of that. And of course, Saturn won the match because, you know, Saturn. You know, but again, I enjoyed the match. It was fun. As Bruce Pritchard would say, this is the ha-ha match of the show. And then even more Nitro Girls dancing, which, I mean, it's nice to see them dancing, but again, I saw no point in it being on this pay-per-view. But after this, we had Disco Inferno versus Billy Kidman for the WCW Cruiserweight Championship. And I have to say, this is just my opinion, at least. You know, I'm going to, you know, try to watch more of these WCW shows and see if my opinion changes on this, but I honestly believe that this match was the best performance I have ever seen from Disco Inferno. I truly believe that. Anyone that's, you know, been a big follower of WCW as much as I have, or more than I was, let me know of a better performance that he had. Because this one, I really love this match. This is probably my second favorite match of the entire pay-per-view, honestly, if I'm being honest. It was a very good match, good action, very well-paced, told a very good story. And honestly, like, the way the match was built up and the way they were building it up from start to finish, it felt like it could have gone either way. It could have been either man could have won and I would have been satisfied. And especially if I was watching it live at that time, like if I had watched the pay-per-view live as it was happening, I probably would have been fine with either one of them winning. Because again, I was a fan of Disco Inferno during this time. And if you're a fan of good, good storytelling, good in-ring action, and if you're a fan of Disco Inferno, this is a good match to check out. And Billy Kidman, of course, was always a great athlete, one of the best cruiserweights that WCW ever had. And, and again, it felt like it could have gone either way for either man. But in the end, Kidman retained the Cruiserweight Championship with his, of course, the signature move, the Shooting Star Press, even though the way he would always do the Shooting Star Press always scared me. Like he was in a, which he did botch it a lot. But it's just the way he would do it, it's like, instead of doing like a straight up forward flip, back flip, like most people would do, he goes off sideways, and it's very awkward looking, and it's, yeah. I mean, it gave Chavo Guerrero a concussion, so, and I've seen a few videos where he tried doing it, and then he tangled himself up on the ropes, but, it is what it is. And then up next, we had Scott Steiner and the Giant versus Rick Steiner and Buff Bagwell for the WCW World Tag Team titles. And for about 5 or 6 minutes, pretty standard. Rick taking up fighting Scott, fighting the Giant, and then after about that time, Buff turned on Rick, showing that he's still NWO for life. He high-fived Scott, high-fived Giant, gave them the hug, and then ducked out of there for the rest of the match. Leaving Rick to basically be destroyed by Scott and Giant. But it eventually backfired on them because Rick shocked everyone and would go on to win the match by himself, winning the tag team titles in the process, and earning that one-on-one match with his brother Scott that would happen immediately following this tag team title match. And this match was a hard-hitting fight, as expected from these two. I mean, especially because whenever you get wrestling matches where it's brother versus brother, like real-life brother versus brother, the chemistry is always impeccable, I mean, like Brett versus Owen, their matches were always phenomenal. Matt and Jeff had some great matches against each other. I'm trying to think of some other like wrestling siblings that have had great matches with each other. I mean, Brett and Owen and Matt and Jeff are always the ones that stand out, but this one, I really enjoyed this match very much. I thought it was a very good match. For the limited time that it was given, I thought they did a great job. Again, hard hitting fight, great back and forth action. And then like towards the end of the match, the person that topped the guardrail wearing a suit and a Bill Clinton mask that beat up security, got into the ring, and took out the referee, took out Rick Steiner, took off the mask. It was Buff Bagwell, yeah. And yeah, he was there to basically help Scott win the match and embarrass little brother Rick. I think Rick is the little brother. I don't know. I didn't pay attention to that part. But Rick was able to overpower both of them, took out Buff Bagwell, and then took out Scott Steiner, and was victorious in this match, and it was awesome, in my opinion. And then up next, we had one of the big, semi-main event matches, because they had like four matches that could have been a main event match on here. And this was one of them. And I think that's actually, the last four matches of the pay-per-view are those four matches that, like I said, could be the main event of any pay-per-view. It was Scott Hall versus Kevin Nash. Because, during this time, NWO had split up, and they had NWO Hollywood, which was led by Hogan, and then NWO Wolfpack, led by Kevin Nash. And Scott was part of the Wolfpack, but then he turned on Kevin Nash for whatever reasons that I can't remember at the time. And this was also, during the time period where they were putting Scott Hall's real-life alcohol abuse on TV for storylines, and I mean they showed a lot of it during the pre-match video package, and it was really uncomfortable to watch, if I'm being honest. And especially because I've had a lot of friends and you know, that have dealt with issues like that. A lot of close loved ones that have dealt with those kind of issues, and it's something that it hits home for me. So watching it on here was, yeah, it was uncomfortable for me at least. And the whole thing is that Kevin Nash was just trying to help out his friend, and Scott was, you know, as many of them are in real life, they didn't want it. They didn't want to hear any of it. They just wanted to be left alone. They just wanted to keep on drinking. You know, that's what the storyline was. You know, but let's say the match itself was honestly very good, and at least to me it was. I mean, because as again, it told a great story, and every bit of action that happened throughout the match made sense for that story, and I genuinely loved it and enjoyed it. Like, because at the beginning during the entrances, Scott Hall came out with a cup of beer, and he was like wobbling around like he's drunk, and then he gets into the ring, and then Kevin Nash comes out, and when Kevin gets into the ring, Scott tosses the beer into his face and shows that no, he's not drunk. He baited him in so that he can, you know, get the sucker hit in there, and you know, just kind of they both kind of just beat the shit out of each other off and on, throughout the match, and just yeah, it was, like I said, told a good story, and like how Kevin Nash said it about the Sasha Banks and Bayley from TakeOver in 2015, during that SummerSlam weekend, that everything they did made sense, and that's how I felt about this match. And it wasn't a long match. I would say maybe between 10 and 15 minutes tops for this, but it told a good story. I enjoyed it, and like for like the first, I would say maybe the first 2/3 of the match, it was all Scott just beating the shit out of Kevin Nash, because you know, Kevin Nash was, I guess he was portraying as that he doesn't want to hurt his best friend. You know, this man that he loves like a brother, you know, that's how it came off very genuine with that, you know. But eventually he did start fighting back, and after two jackknife power bombs, Nash decided, fuck it, I'm just gonna go, you know, I made my point, I made my peace, and he just walked out of the match, didn't care. Got the count out, and Scott Hall was victorious, but Scott was down and out after two jackknife powerbombs. And, you know, the first one, you know, was a pretty standard jackknife that Kevin Nash would do, but the second one, where he almost lost his balance a little bit trying to hold him, but then he, with all his upper strength, lifted him all the way up, and then boom, one big powerbomb, and that one looked like it hurt pretty good. But yeah, I enjoyed this match. It was a very good match. Again, great story being told. And then we had yet another Nitro Girls dancing segment. But then next came up the match that I was honestly the most excited to watch on this pay-per-view. Bret Hart versus Sting for the WCW United States Heavyweight Championship. And I mean, of course, this is the match I was going to be most excited to watch, because I mean, it's Bret Hart versus Sting, two of the greatest of all time, and Bret Hart is my all-time favorite wrestler. I mean, hell, if you're watching this on YouTube, you see the Bret Hart sunglasses sitting right behind me. So, you know, of course, Bret Hart is my favorite, and I have three items of his that are autographed: his 3-disc DVD released in 2005, the companion piece magazine as well, and his biography released in 2007/2008, because it was released in Canada in 2007, released in the United States in 2008. And I got those three items autographed, and I have my picture with him for the autograph when I went to get his book, and a picture of me with Bret, Jim Neidhart, and Jimmy Hart when I met him in 2007. And so, yeah, Bret Hart is my favorite, if you didn't know that already. But yeah, this was a very, very good match. And this is the one that, to me, was my favorite match of the pay-per-view. Like I said, Disco and Billy Kidman was number two. This one is number one to me. And it was good, solid action throughout from start to finish. But again, of course it was. It's Bret and Sting. They're two of the greatest. But what I really liked about it is that Bret Hart was the chicken shit heel during this time, and of course Sting the ultimate babyface. Nobody can hate Sting. Even when they tried turning him heel towards the end of WCW, it just didn't work. When they turned him heel in TNA with the Main Event Mafia, fans couldn't boo him, really. You know, they tried hard, but they couldn't boo him. This match, it was the Sharpshooter versus the Scorpion Deathlock, which, same move, just different names, and presentation of it is different between the two. And I'd say it went about maybe 15, almost 20 minutes, which, I wish I could have seen a lot more, because I love both men very, very much. But it was a great match. You know, Bret Hart played the chicken shit heel so well during this, to the point where he had to cheat to win this match. First, getting a foreign object from his tights to try to, I think it was supposed to be like a version of brass knuckles to try to punch out Sting, which didn't work. And then after a ref bump, Sting tried to do the Stinger Splash and he overshot it and hit his head on the ring post. So then Bret went outside and grabbed Sting's black baseball bat, started beating the hell out of him with that one for a good few hits, and then locked on the Sharpshooter, but Sting was unconscious. So the referee did the whole raise the arm three times, then rang the bell. Bret Hart was victorious, retaining the United States Championship. So, and I remember they had another match a year later at the WCW Mayhem pay-per-view, when they were doing the tournament to crown the WCW heavyweight champion at the time. And I remembered watching it and liking it, but I don't remember if it's a better match than this one. So I might have to revisit that one at some point. And then we had the match that made this pay-per-view so infamous, and it was Hollywood Hogan versus The Warrior. The match that they hyped up for weeks and all night long as the biggest grudge match, the biggest rematch in the history of professional wrestling, 8.5 years in the making. And I didn't even write down any notes for this match. It's literally like, look, if you're watching this on YouTube, look at the screen. I literally just have it at the top of the page, Hollywood Hogan versus The Warrior, then a blank line, and then the main event match afterwards. I didn't know what to write down for this one, because my God, it was legitimately one of the worst matches I have ever seen, and I've seen a lot of bad matches. Honestly, this is worse than any great Khali match that I've ever seen. And that is not an exaggeration. At least great Khali matches, they're supposed to be bad, and they're hilariously bad. But they're still somewhat entertaining. This was as bad as the first presidential debate or earlier this month. It was just such a shit show of a match, and the worst part is that the match only happened so Hogan could get his win back from after losing to Warrior at WrestleMania 6. That was literally the only reason why this even happened. It was so bad. Like, the timing was off 100% all the way. Warrior was a shell of his former self. He was not, I mean, he was, it was just so fucking bad. It was such a bad match. I don't have the right words to describe it. It was just so bad, and my throat's getting dry. I gotta take a drink. Oh my God. And then, when the part of the match everyone remembers most, when Hogan tried to throw the flash paper in Warrior's face, and it did not work, and it blew up in Hogan's face, and they had to play it off as if Warrior got out, swiped away at it or whatever the fuck. It was just so bad, so bad. It was. Did I mention that it was bad? Because it was bad. It was pretty fucking bad. And if you've never seen it, normally I would say go out of your way to check it out, but I don't know if I would want you to do that to yourselves. I mean, Hogan won the match, obviously, but it's just, I mean, if you like to torture yourself, go ahead and watch this match. Yeah, I'm sure there'll be people that, you know, that'll say that it's not as bad as people are saying, but to me, it was worse than anyone I'd ever heard describe it. Wow. But anyways, the main event of the pay-per-view, it was Diamond Dallas Page versus Bill Goldberg for the WCW World Heavyweight Championship. And what makes this match so famous is that because the pay-per-view ran a little long, the people who ordered the live pay-per-view didn't get to watch this match on pay-per-view, because this match started at the 3 hour, just after the 3 hour mark, where the pay-per-view had cut off. So, yeah, they refunded everybody who ordered the pay-per-view and aired it for free on Nitro the next night. So, but yeah, let me get to my notes for this match. DDP versus Goldberg. You know, the introductions by Michael Buffer, as always, for the main events of the WCW pay-per-views. They always just make the matches more exciting and more hyped up. They really do. Even if the match ends up being shit, him doing the introductions just adds that hype to it. And also, yeah, and I'm gonna read it word for word that I have it on here. This is a much better match than I expected it to be. I didn't expect it to suck. Just didn't think it would be this good. And that's honestly how I felt. Because, I mean, I do like Goldberg. You know, I prefer the WCW version of him because that was him at his peak. You know, when WWE brought him in the first time, especially. You know, I mean, the matches that he had with Triple H weren't so bad. I enjoyed them at least. But yeah, just Goldberg wasn't Goldberg when during that run that he had from 2003 to 2004. But I did enjoy when he came back from 2016 and 2017, the couple of matches that he had with Brock Lesnar, especially the one at WrestleMania. It was WrestleMania 33 that my brother Javi got to attend. So a little annoyed about that. You know, he got to go to WrestleMania 33, and then my oldest brother got to go to WrestleMania 20. When's my turn? You know, eventually I'll have my chance, and I'll get to go to a WrestleMania. But we shall see. Hey, maybe if I can, I can try to get tickets for WrestleMania for next year, since they're gonna do it in Tampa. You know, take two. But anyways, yeah, it was a very well-paced match. Action was solid. Didn't leave too much breathing time, you know, for this match, which is good because, you know, for a typical Goldberg match, which it essentially was, you don't want it to go on too long. Because fans, they're not there to see a 30-minute, you know, classic wrestling match with Bill Goldberg. They want to see Goldberg, you know, do hard hitting, kick some ass, kill them with the spear, kill them with the jackhammer. That's what fans want to see, and that's what we got from this match. You know, it was kept fans engaged from start to finish. You know, again, well paced, action was solid. I have no complaints about this match. You know. Although, if I had watched it live, I would have complained that I didn't get to watch it live. So, I would say it only lasted around 10 minutes-ish, 10-ish minutes, I would say. But it was still very enjoyable. I enjoyed it, at least. And of course, like I said, Goldberg retained the WWE World Heavyweight Championship and would go on to hold it for another 2 months before he eventually lost it to Kevin Nash at Starrcade that year, where he lost to a stun gun to the chest, and then a jackknife powerbomb for the 1-2-3, where that would eventually lead to the famous finger poke of doom, where Hogan won back the WCW title, and the NWO Hollywood and NWO Wolfpack reunited to become NWO Elite. I think that's what it was. Either way, it's just, yeah. But yeah, that was my recap of WCW Halloween Havoc 1998, which, if you take out the Hogan Warrior match, pretty solid pay-per-view, if you ask me. You know, it's just that match being the shit stain of an otherwise solid pay-per-view. That's the legacy that this pay-per-view has. This pay-per-view will always be known as the show where we had where we had Hogan versus Warrior, and it stunk up the joint. You know, because you get certain pay-per-views that are remembered for that one moment or that one match, and this one is remembered for Hogan versus Warrior, and not for the good reasons that people remember Hogan versus Warrior WrestleMania 6, which obviously was a much better match. But yeah, that's going to do it for this edition of Classic Wrestling Pay-Per-Views. And I promise I will be back in November for the Classic Wrestling Pay-Per-View that I have planned for then. So be on the lookout for that. In the meantime, check out my previous entries of Classic Wrestling Pay-Per-Views. My one that I did for September for Mind Games in Your House 1996, SummerSlam 1998, ECW One Night Stand 2005, WWF Beware of Dog in Your House, ECW Barely Legal, which I did as a watch-along. Beware of Dog was done as a watch-along. The very first WrestleMania, done as a watch-along as well. WCW Super Bowl 2001, Royal Rumble 2000, Starrcade 1997, Survivor Series 2002, and Bad Blood in Your House 1997. And also check out my podcast that I did a couple weeks ago for the WWE Draft 2020, recapping everything that went on with that and my thoughts on how the draft went down. And also just check out everything else I've done for the Men in Tights podcast, my regular podcast episodes, my retro film reviews, my regular movie reviews, video game reviews, my mental health podcast that I've done, and I do have one coming up very soon. I'm just trying to gather up more information so I can present something worthwhile for that. And if you're not subscribed to the Men in Tights podcast, you can do so by hitting the little bell, little subscription bar and bell right here on the corner of my YouTube video. But, you know, if you'd like to listen to the audio only version so that you don't have to look at my sweet, sweet little face for 30 plus minutes, you can do so by subscribing to me on Spotify, Google Podcasts, CastBox, Radio Public, Breaker, Anchor. The direct links to all of those will be in the description for this episode. And if you'd like to support the Men in Tights podcast, you can do so by joining my Patreon for $1 a month. That link is in the description as well. And also by purchasing a t-shirt for the Men in Tights podcast store. That link is in the description as well. I have quite a few designs and I'm working on some new ones coming very soon. And also there's a link for my friend Julie's GoFundMe to help out with some legal funds that she has going for a very, very important case that she is fighting. And any little bit helps. So if you have a good heart, click the link in the description as well for that and help out a good friend of mine. And thank you all so much for watching, for listening, for subscribing. I love and appreciate every single one of you who do. I truly and genuinely do. I'm not just saying that because it's this little line that I say at the end of all these episodes. It's true and genuine from the heart. And I hope you all are doing well and staying safe, taking care of yourselves, taking care of your loved ones, staying safe, staying healthy, doing the best that you can, being the best people that you can be, being good to each other. And this has been Classic Wrestling Pay-Per-Views from the Men in Tights podcast. I am Julian, and I will see you all next time. Bye-bye.